According to numbers out last month from the National Center for Children in Poverty, 44% of U.S. children live in low-income families, and about one in every five live in poor families. Meanwhile, there's an ongoing debate over the impact of single-parent families as compared to two-parent families.
But how do things like poverty and family structure play out in the day-to-day world of parenting? A new report uses census data to try to figure out the answer and how we're doing on some of the basics of positive parenting. Sandra Hofferth is with us now. She's a professor of family science at the University of Maryland School of Public Health. She's the author of this new report on parenting. It was published by the Council on Contemporary Families. Sandra, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be with you.
Well, let's start with the parenting behaviors we're trying to measure here. What are some of the indicators that you're looking at?
The Census Bureau report looked at a couple of very critical measures, including reading to children, eating breakfast or dinner together as a family, having clear rules regarding television viewing, and facilitating children's participation in extracurricular activities. And these are key measures in terms of children's later long-term emotional and cognitive health, particularly reading to children is associated with their being prepared for school. Eating breakfast helps communication between parents and children, as well as, of course, nutrition. Having rules that pediatricians recommend that children not watch more than 2 hours of television a day. And then extracurricular activities are very important for children's later, their grades in school, their social lives, and eventually possibly getting accepted at college and going to college.
Now, these seem like little things, you know, a breakfast here, a storybook there, but they add up?
Absolutely. One of the most important findings in developmental psychology is that the communication, the amount of communication, the number of words that between parents and children is critical for their development of language. The more words they hear, for example, psychologists have compared highly educated parents and the words to their children, and then less educated parents, and find there's a big difference in just even the amount of language, and that's critical for children's development of syntax, being able to read, write, and be successful in school.
Now, the overall findings is, it sounds like we're doing pretty well. There are a lot of questions, as we said up front, about, single-parent families versus two-parent families. But the big finding in your report seems to be that's not so much the big deal as income, people in poverty versus everybody else.
Yes, there is a lot of concern in the country about whether children would do well in two-parent families versus single-parent families. And so at the beginning of the report, the author certainly looked at compared families with two parents compared to families with headed by single parent, mostly the mother. They found some small differences, but in some cases they were like reading one time a week. For example, if two parents read seven times a week and single parents six times, there might be some differences, but they're very small. The differences were not large, and most parents know what they're supposed to be doing with their children, for example, reading to them. Most parents had rules for their children on media, and for the most part, they ate breakfast or dinner with their children. But there was one area in which there were some interesting differences, and if we look at extracurricular activities, that's for a little older children, say in the early teen years. There was a difference of 10 percentage points between, say, a family with two parents and a family with one parent, between 33 or 34% and 24%. However, when they divided it by poverty, they found that the families that were well off, say, 200% of poverty, 44% of their children were in extracurricular activities, and only 22% of children who were in families below the poverty level. So there was a much larger percentage difference by income compared with family structure.
And was that true on a lot of these indicators, reading to kids, meals together, that sort of thing? Did those kind of differences persist by income?
Well, you have to remember that income and family structure are highly confounded. and that is for a two-parent family, only 14% are in poverty, whereas if you look at a single-parent family, 41% of those families are poor. So in a sense, you're confounding family structure and income, and you can't really sort it out, just one variable at a time. But I think I have done some analysis looking at these variables simultaneously, and there I continue to find that income and education and things linked with income remain very important in what parents do with children and in children's later outcomes. Some of the family structure measures just decline substantially. But I think there's one interesting finding that the report also included families with two parents, but they were not married. So these were the two biological parents, just hadn't gotten married yet, and that is happening a lot today. So they go ahead and have a child, and they maybe later on get married, but they're not yet married. And those families are more like the single parents, the single mother families, in terms of some of these indicators. They're less likely to read to children on a regular basis. They have much lower levels of participation in extracurricular activity among their children. And those families, 37% are poor. So on the basis of that, I came to the conclusion that it really is more the income of the family rather than the number of parents.
And this, you point out in writing about this, that this is a big deal in part because many children, one in five by some measures, are living in poverty in the United States. So if this is a big cohort, not getting these kind of parenting behaviors.
Absolutely. And I point out that it's as many as 26%, one in four of the very youngest children are in families that are below the poverty line. And most psychologists and developmental psychologists, economists, most people believe that the early years are critical to get children exposed to language, to get them the advantages that middle-class families have, but particularly for things like communication. It's a higher percent, and there is a recent report that came out that suggested in public schools, almost half of the children in public schools today are low income, that is, at free or reduced price lunch. So it's a tremendous problem in the United States if there are these gaps by income and what parents do with children.
Well, stepping a bit beyond the report you wrote and looking at what we know about how families work, why are these differences? Is it a case that the low-income families don't know about these positive parenting practices, or they know, but they don't have the time, the resources to participate in these things?
That's an excellent question. Well, take a look at, I think one comparison would be eating meals with children, and another one would be extracurricular activities. On the extracurricular activities, there we find that some of those activities do require resources. Even though there are many activities at public schools, after-school activities, clubs, that don't cost anything, when you look at lessons, there's a cost to that. For sports, many times there might be equipment, there would be fees. That are involved. It might be costs in a traveling team. So these are not, for the most part, they're not totally costless. I think sports was one of the areas where there was the biggest difference between higher income and low income families. On the other hand, when they looked at eating dinner with parents, there they found that in some cases children of single parents were more likely to be eating dinner at home. And so there's a case in which there might be an advantage, and we suspect that that's because it's linked to the lesser likelihood of their children being in extracurricular activities, because once you have children in several different activities, you might be eating shifts on dinner and not being able to eat together every night. So we think that those two are linked together. There are differences depending on the type of activity, but I would say that because most of the parents said they were reading to children 6 days a week at least, that most parents know that these are good and they should be involved with their children. Reading, having rules, 90% of parents said they had rules for the children regarding television. Most of them did eat breakfast with their children. So parents do know that these are the things, but they can't always afford them or do them in practice.
We're talking to Sandra Hofferth from the University of Maryland, looking at a new study on parenting in the United States, what positive parenting looks like, and how things like the number of parents, single family, two-parent families, and family income can affect parenting.
And you can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. As a parent, are you or were you able to do some of these things to get your kids involved in sports, to read to them, to have meals together? And what obstacles stand in your way? Single parents, parents with lower income, share your experiences. What kind of challenges do you face? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation with family science professor Sandra Hofferth with University of Maryland, talking about her new report on how we parent in the United States. Looking at census data, she checks out how parents are doing and what kind of impact things like the number of parents and family income have on parenting.
You can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234. We're hearing the big national numbers. You can bring a personal face to it at 800-642-1234. What do you think are the key things that make a difference in parenting, that day-to-day stuff? Is it reading to kids, the mealtime, getting your kids out and involved in activities? And what kind of roadblocks are there with your work? Maybe being low income. Or if you're a single parent, what stands in the way of the things that you know are good for your kids? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Sandra, before we get to our callers, so we know, as you've said, that low-income families, obstacles for them, have a hard time doing some of these things that we know are good for kids. So I guess the next question is how to help, how to make a difference, how to get these positive parenting behaviors more common for these kids.
Yes, that's a great question. Well, there are a number of policy options that certainly that President Obama has proposed, expanding the earned income tax credit, increasing, one thing to do is increase the child care credit. Right now there's a credit where parents can get a fraction of what they spend on child care. And any of these things would help improve family incomes so they might be able to be able to afford the fees for children's extracurricular activities. They might be able to get an extra car, an extra vehicle, because there's a lot of shuttling children back and forth when they get to be older teenagers, to be able to get back and forth to work so that they would have the time. I'm looking at the numbers in Wisconsin. The average cost of infant care, for example, is $11,300 a year. That's for an infant. And that would be, depending if for a single parent, that would be almost half your income. For a two-parent family, it would be maybe 14%. The highest cost is in New York, which with about $14,000 a year, and the lowest is in Mississippi, Louisiana, with $5,000. So if you go to a four-year-old in Wisconsin, the cost of child care is $9,000. So full-time care, and this is the average annual cost, I guess, across both center and family child care, about $9,000. So that's a lot of money, and anything to help parents to afford that. And those would be good this is good quality care, because in those situations, the provider is providing cognitive stimulation, reading to the children, and helping while parents are working.
Let's get to our callers. We've got Becky on the line with us in Madison. Becky, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for calling in.
What did you want to bring up, Becky?
I'm a single mom. I have my kids 24/7. My son's father's been incarcerated for 8 years. My youngest is 8. My oldest is 18. And I just wanted to talk about the constant stress that I feel. I'm politically active, and it's very depressing to see this earning credit taken away, to see my son has dental coverage, but actually nobody will take it in Madison, so we had to drive an hour and a half north, and then we had a referral to Rhinelander, which is 7 hours away about, and so it just seems like, I mean, just for me to just keep my health in okay shape, I've because of the constant stress, I end up having digestive trouble and having all kinds of food allergies, and just it's just like the stress and the worry and the never ends, because it's all me and I can't get sick, you know, and I'm low income. So I just wanted to just say that.
That's Becky, Becky, thank you so much for sharing your experience. Sandra, a lot of work, a lot of stress being a single parent and being a low income single parent in particular. How big a factor is it, do you think, in making it difficult to do a lot of these good things for kids?
Yes, I'm really sorry to hear that. That is quite a shame. I was wondering, is your child doing fine in school, and does he have after school care that can help and give you some relief as well? Is there anything like that for you that would help?
Becky?
Yes. Thankfully, he's in the school system at Madison. It's a very good school. And he's doing well. He's in the 99th percentile. He's very intelligent. He's especially good in math. But he's late to school several times a week because I'm just not able to get, you know, just the constant cycle of demand about work and food and, you know, bed and everything. I don't read to him at night. It's been a great regret of mine because I did always want to do that, but I just find us to be totally exhausted.
Becky, thanks a lot, and good luck to you and your kids. I want to get on to some more callers, Sandra, so let's go to Melody in Mercer. Melody, hi.
Hi. I just, you know, to kind of piggyback on, you know, being tired, it's really hard to not be frustrated, and it's really hard to find the energy to just find enjoyment and appreciation for your children, because you're usually just annoyed. You don't want to be, but you are.
Melody, and are you in a situation where you're a single parent or working in a low income in your family?
I was for many, many years, but now I'm a working mom with two other children, and I do have a husband, and he's wonderful and helps tremendously, but you're still a mom and three kids and working, and you actually want to try to enjoy your kids, but you're just so tired this time.
Melody, thanks a lot. So tired, hard to be the positive parent we want to be all the time, Sandra.
Yes, but it sounds as though you do have some time for your children. You can talk at the dinner table. It sounds as though, that unfortunately is what raising children does involve sometimes. But it sounds as though your kids are doing well. Is that right in the school system?
Melody?
So far, so good. We don't actually eat at the dinner table ever. I'm a nurse, so I work at all. Various shifts all the time, but you know, we try to like give as many hugs and kisses and as much good food as possible, but that's basically it. You know, you just try to give a hug, try to give a kiss, but sometimes you're just yelling and
Melody, thanks a lot for the call. Sandra, again, nationwide, a lot of people nurses, retail workers, restaurant workers have those shifts where they just can't be at mealtime predictably. Is there any substitute for the benefits that provides?
Well, certainly if one parent can, there might be one parent there. It doesn't have to be both parents in any case, but just to sit down or even in the car when you're taking the child to school or any time at all, just to chat about things. I think just the language, just communicating, that's really more important than reading to children. It could be. And so it's just keeping the communication going is important. I think as far as any activities you can do, the other thing would be try and make sure that you can find good quality after school care for the children and make sure that in those settings the children are talking with the caregivers and reading and doing activities in those programs. That's really, really important. And when I pointed out the cost of care, I think anything that could help provide funds for parents and particularly the increase in the child care tax credit would be helpful because, as I say, with the cost in Wisconsin of being $9,000 a year for a four-year-old, and the most you can get back is $1,000. If you spend $3,000, you get a third back. That anything to help parents would be wonderful and would make, I think, all of these mothers much happier.
Sandra, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it. Best wishes to everybody, and thank you for sharing your stories.
That's Sandra Hofroth, professor of family science at the University of Maryland School of Public Health. We've got the report we've been talking about, a summary linked on the Central Time Facebook page.